Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Saliba. Falls kindly for Jonathan David. And there is his hat trick. A night to savor and then some for Canada's all-time leading goal scorer.
Jonathan David with three of Canada's six goals in their 6-0 win against Qatar to really put them in strong position to move on or to actually potentially win their group. Jonathan David, scores in the 29th minute, the 45th minute, and the 90th minute. So he really took advantage at the end of halves. Really took advantage there.
Yeah, good for him.
Also, a lot of red cards again.
Yes. We also got a little kerfuffle.
We did surpass the 2022 tournament, which we were only one red card away after the first day. It took till the first day of the second round of matches to finally surpass it, which I guess also points to there's not really many red cards. It just so happens to happen when, like, Mexico's playing, or I guess Qatar's playing, and Mexico only has the one. It's not even really their fault necessarily. It was South Africa. But we got there. Good for Canada. They're not a particularly strong national team. Like, Mexico and the U.S. really do kind of run the big three of CONCACAF. But that was a really fun win to watch. I missed entirely, though, the second red card. I was working at the time when the midfielder for Canada ultimately breaks his leg. And that's why the red card is handed out. I completely missed it. When I turned back to look at the TV, you saw the stretcher coming out, and then you had everyone huddled around. The Qatari player is crying. I mean, awful, awful moment there. I did not even see it live. I have certainly not looked back to go find it. But that's the only thing, and it mars that 6-0 win because you have that. I mean, even the team. You saw some of the players as well on Canada crying. You have this awesome win. How much can you celebrate it when one of your guys, who's probably, for many of these guys, one of their best friends, goes down? But ultimately, a very, very strong win from them. And then also in Group B yesterday, Switzerland took down Bosnia and Herzegovina 4-1. If you'd watched about 75 minutes of that game, you missed all the goals. The 73rd minute is the first goal of the game. And then it just balloons out of nowhere. You could have watched 75% of that game and missed everything. Which, you know, is probably true of, like, basketball too, right? Most people say just get there in the fourth quarter. I guess for soccer, and get there about the 75th minute. Then it gets really interesting.
That's when it gets interesting. And I mean, I will never forget the game from Monday, Spain and Cape Verde.
Right.
Where things do get interesting on the other side for Cape Verde. Because now the expectation is you're in the 75th minute. Get that draw.
You got to close it out. We're right. I mean, you mentioned it too when we were talking with Brian Shiretta yesterday that I was like moving the goalposts.
Yeah, it was fun.
We were watching it because it was when they got to like 25 minutes, the first hydration break, I was like,
hey,
0-0, baby.
It's 0-0 against Spain. And then once you get later on, it's like, okay, no, things are now going to be expected because it'll hurt now if you don't do it.
It was weird, too. I had changed, like, who I was talking about, too. Because we got to halftime, I was like, this is really bad by Spain. Like, I'm not even talking about Cape Verde or Cabo Verde, if you want to say it in Portuguese. But I'm not even, like, worried about them. I'm more looking at Spain going, ooh.
What's up?
Guys, come on. Like, what are we doing? And then, like, the 75th minute, I completely flipped back to Cape Verde where I'm like, no, finish the job.
Get it done. And that
was such a fun.
Then they had the incredible chance late in that one. I was like, what, like the 85th minute or something, that header?
Very late. Yeah, it was very, very late.
And it was, but like, oh man.
It goes right to the goalkeeper, but it was still, it was that he had a clean look at it. It was arguably the best chance of the last 15 or so minutes from either team. And so
it would be their best chance all game.
We'll see what kind of encore Cape Verde has on Sunday at 6 when they take on Uruguay. Uruguay did not have a great game against Saudi Arabia. That ended in a 1-1 draw, not as well, but it ended in a draw as well. So both Spain and Uruguay, you're going to, I think, learn a lot about those two teams on Sunday. Spain takes on Saudi Arabia at noon, same day. And Spain, until I've seen a lot of people who cover more international soccer than I watch, but they had talked about Spain as, you know, outside of 2010, they're like the most disappointing European team at the World Cup, like outside of England.
Like, England won in 66, and that's kind of about it. Like, they have no European championships. Like, they all talk about it's coming home, but, like, they don't really have much of a trophy case in terms of international game. Spain was, they have four European championships. Why are they so bad in the World Cup? And then 2010 happens, they win it, and it's sort of all forgotten until recently, where it's kind of all come back, and it's like, ah, here's the team that builds a great midfield but can't score. And that sort of was, like, exactly what the Cape Verde game was. They had all the possession in the world, but they couldn't score. They didn't have any really dangerous chances. They have to bring on Yamal, who's not really healthy, to try to get one through, and they can't even then. So I'm excited to see what the encore is for Cabo Verde and for Saudi Arabia as well. They can make that group really, really fun.
There's a lot of games that, you know, we're going to see what's the second set of games going to look like now, because we have potential for stories to branch out.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, that draw from Monday for Spain, though, hurts a lot less. Why?
Oh, right, yeah.
Because there's a draw between the other two teams.
Yeah, and if you blow out Saudi Arabia and win 4-5-0, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, then you're probably getting away with it.
Especially, too, look at Argentina last time out. They lose to Saudi Arabia in that opening game. Mm-hmm. They literally never fall short again. Like, they just go on a run, and it's totally fine. And yeah, like, there's also where, you know, the first game can build a lot of storylines. It's now is like, okay, was that just, you know, wiping the dust off and getting the ball rolling, and all right, a team kind of threw everything at you. You had to kind of get woken up. It's the same with the United States, by the way, as well. Like, they have the super positive moment against Paraguay.
Can you follow it up?
Can you follow it up?
Another strong performance. After the first set of games, you start to form your questions and then wonder, okay, if I have to answer in the affirmative, okay, what's up with this? And if it's changed even, okay, can you get yourself into a better position now because you may have righted the ship, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Or you are going to become the disappointment of the tournament all of a sudden.
Which Spain has been known to do.
Spain has been, really?
2014.
Oh no.
The tournament after, they win it. I cannot remember who makes the call, but it's their first game. They play the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And they lose 5-0. And it's after, like, the fourth goal. The guy goes, Spain's embarrassment complete. You know, I wish I remember who made the call, because I do love it, because a lot of English commentators, boy, it's poetry in motion. Like
they can get cutting with those words.
It's so good, but I remember that. It's like Spain's been that before, England's been that before, Italy. I mean, a lot of these big nations you think of have been the disappointment. I'm just really into the United States right now. I love that even internationally they were looked at as one of the big takeaways from the first round of games. For how good they looked against Paraguay, a team that was very strong defensively. I've mentioned they beat Brazil and Argentina. They also beat Uruguay in qualifying. You know, those are three of the four best teams in South America. Colombia is probably also a part of that. And they beat three of them to get there. Very strong defensive team. And the U.S. just ran all over them. It never really looked like it was much of a threat. They're up 3-0 at the half. Australia is another team. The U.S. will have the ball most of the time. Like, when you will look up at the screen, the U.S. will almost definitely have the ball. Like, that's what it was against Turkey. Australia just was about the counterattack. But I kind of want to see what happens if this team doesn't score early. The best case scenario for the U.S., because it gets Australia completely out of whack, is if they score early. They go up 1-0, like 10 minutes in. All right, now Australia's chasing. But I do kind of want to see what the U.S. looks like if we're 45 minutes in, we're 55 minutes in, and it's still 0-0. Or you've had to chase, you've had to make it 1-1, and Australia can still play their game. I want to see how they respond, especially to Pulisic. The reports are out of this morning, he is healthy enough to play. That does not mean he is going to start. That could absolutely mean he is on the bench. How do you look? Because the start of the second half, they don't look as strong without Pulisic. They don't have that creative talisman, that guy that can just make magic out of it. I mean, those 45 minutes by him.
Talisman out here like it's something that normal...
It's soccer. We're going for it. I haven't brought up magician yet. we'll get there.
No, I love it. Like, use words that are not in everyday lexicon. Why not?
But he's the guy that moves everything. And so how do they look if he potentially is not right out of the gate starting for you? You know, does it become a thing where, oh no, they do need to have him healthy this whole tournament because they don't have that second option? I think they may. We talked with Brian Schroeder yesterday. He brought up guys like Timothy Weah, who for the most part now plays more of a left back kind of position. But at the last World Cup, a World Cup in which he scores, he plays more on the wing. So they could absolutely bring him back into doing that. I'm just – I want it. Same thing on the negative side with Spain and Uruguay there, and for Cape Verde, their second acts. I want to see what the U.S. has. It's been a while. It's been a week since we've seen them play. And what they left us with was their best World Cup performance arguably ever, like in just a singular game that maybe is their best performance. What is the follow-up? Australia also has something to play for in this. Australia could win the group if they win tonight. For them, it's the same thing.
It's the same conversation for both of those teams.
If Turkey and Paraguay draw and Australia wins, they win the group.
Right.
That could be huge for them.
Yeah. It's something that can be very interesting here. And I mean, so Turkey is on the other side of this, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they would need some help. But it would give them, say it goes the other way, like U.S. Australia draws and then Turkey wins. Like all of a sudden, it could get a little messy in that group.
Game day three becomes kind of must watch, which is frustrating because the games will be at 10 o'clock on a Thursday night. That's really all I care about.
Nobody's perfect.
I'm not even really looking at the knockout yet. I just would like to know if next Thursday I get to go to bed at a reasonable time.
Nobody's perfect. I mean, we witnessed the NHL do whatever the heck they did. So, yeah, I'm very fascinated to see what the storylines can form now, because questions start getting asked. Now it's about, okay, where are the angles for everyone? What's the stories? What are the trends happening? What is like the potential disaster? What is the surprise team? What if Cape Verde wins a game here?
They're out of the knockout stage. Like, then they go from just a cute, fun story to, okay, like...
Your first World Cup, you're in the knockout stage. Good for you.
But isn't this what we talk about with the NCAA tournament too? Like, it's all fine and dandy if a 15 beats a 2. It's the Sweet 16 runs. It's the Elite 8 runs that were like, okay, now wait a second. Okay, now this means more than just the cute little fun run. It becomes more. And then, of course, the way I look at it too, and it's the same with the schools, but just put it on a much larger scale, the countries... What that can mean for a community. Cape Verde is not a large country.
Right.
They're one of the top three smallest to ever compete in a World Cup.
Even just going to one is a big deal.
Them getting a goal would be incredible. Instead, they got a full-on draw against Spain. Like that, you don't have the pop moment until the end of the game because the result hits. But if they were to beat a team like Saudi Arabia, which I think is very doable for them, very, very doable for them. Likewise, getting a draw against Uruguay, based on how they played against Spain, is very doable. I'm really into them. I should also say, though, like in their group, Australia could be one of the stories of the tournament.
Australia
Turkey was supposed
one.
To be a dark horse, and then they lost 2-0 to Australia when everyone was asleep. Likewise,
when everyone was asleep.
Likewise, though, the U.S. could be that story because as anyone that watched U.S. soccer over the last 15, 20 years would tell you, that performance didn't look normal. That is not normally what you see from a U.S. men's national team. They play very defensive. They use a lot of buzzwords that basically tell you, we're not that good. We have to go on the counter. We have to play very conservative and very safe. That is not what they did against Paraguay. And so now, I mean, that's what I mean by like international people, you know, English pundits who talk about this every day are acknowledging the U.S. was one of the most impressive teams from those first round of games because they just didn't look like a team you would think of the United States. They looked like a team that... If a Brazil is not going to be as good as they have been in years past and they don't play up to snuff, the U.S. could get them.
The U.S. could get them. Sweden. How good is Sweden?
Right.
That's a team.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that put up the most dominant performance in the first round, I do believe.
5-1 against Tunisia. Mm-hmm. Not better than Germany against Curacao, but it's one of the better ones.
Yeah, but it's okay. Who are going to be our powers that we're looking for this tournament? Who are, like, I'm going to have a lot of fun figuring it out and looking at these games, not understanding most of their rosters and the strength of the
it's all good
teams, but figuring out, okay, where are my stories? Who are the teams to look out for? What position are teams putting themselves in? Are you in a favorable spot heading into the third group stage? Or are you in crisis mode where you need a win by like 2 goals even? Because goal differential being that tiebreaker.
Yep.
Like, it's the evolution. That's going to be the part that is always captivating to me on these tournaments. Now, remember, though, we've been talking about, you know, how much we both despise what the NCAA has done in football and basketball with expanding the tournaments. FIFA did this for the World Cup. We also will not get that yet. The group stage is still going to be very fascinating here for a couple weeks.
Well, it could. There is worries, though, that because now eight of the best third place teams go on, does that sort of kill the third day?
I think no, because there's more intrigue for fighting for those.
Mm-hmm. Like and, the favorable matchups, like if we win the group, we get this team rather than if we win second, we get that, you know.
And I would imagine your goal differential, your tiebreakers are going to still formulate via the fighting for the eight third place spots. They're going to be having to look around the entirety of the tournament and going, okay, we have a chance to crack that extra eight. What do we need?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get there? Does a team that is in crisis suddenly find a way to save themselves from being the ultimate disappointment in the tournament? It's all about the execution of the new thing. And, you know, there's concerns about, you know, it ruining that third set of games. I think it's going to enhance it.
It definitely could. 803-0550, the number to call. Kickoff for U.S. and Australia over in Seattle is at 3 o'clock our time. Over there, it's noon. That's tough. Noon on a Friday. I mean, I get it. Some people are going to be taking off, and Seattle's a big, you know, soccer city. But that's,
I mean, enough people have off today, you know.
Oh, that's right.
Happy Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth to people.
That's why
everyone.
We're actually on right now. Sabres Live is off today.
Yes, that is why we're here. Sabres Live is off. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones for an extended version of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point show here.
No, but that's right. I mean, so maybe more than enough people have off. And, I mean, to be fair, you've known about this game for a while. So if you were gonna go, you took off a while ago.
Yeah. You knew about this. And, you know, you have an opportunity to stand back, watch, have some fun.
Although I miss my noon or 1 o'clock kickoffs.
Yeah, the fact that they're all like kind of
the U.S. opens the day at 3. Where are my 1 o'clock noon kickoffs? I needed that.
That's what got us through the early week.
Yes, it was big for me, and I can't watch the U.S. Open yet either because that's all streaming right now. Which, by the way, real quick,
here we go.
5 o'clock. You go over to Peacock yesterday.
Here we go.
We're on USA Network the whole day until 5. What are we doing? I get it's Thursday. It's not the most important day of the U.S. Open. But it was primetime television. Gone. Hope you have Peacock. I don't, by the way. They're all super expensive. I haven't watched a Formula One race in 2 years because of the Apple TV stuff.
And
I used to love that sport. Yeah. I was going out every weekend for it. I have not watched a race in 2 years because of the Apple TV stuff. Come on.
I knew where this was going once you were getting into it. It might be your old man take.
Oh, it totally is. It totally is.
And I'm with you, by the way. Problem is, I'm older than you.
It's because it's not even just sports. I'm seeing people talk about TV shows, and I'm like, I'm never going to get that.
Yeah.
Like, I have HBO. I did not get lunch today. Like, that's the feeling of it. Like, come on. So, like, I'm seeing people, like, watch, like, Widow's Bay on Apple TV. Talk about how great it is. Love to see it. I have to take your word for it. I'm Squidward in the meme where he's like up in his house in the dark watching SpongeBob and Patrick run around having fun. That's what I feel like. I saw Lewis Hamilton won his first race at Ferrari. I was like, that'd been cool to watch. It'd been cool to see. Wasn't there.
Someone get this man an Apple TV subscription.
It's all Apple TV. It's where it all comes back to. It's all Apple TV.
Somebody get this man Apple TV.
U.S.
Share your password with Zachary Jones.
The U.S. Open, though, not on that. It's on Peacock. Wyndham Clark does hold a pretty comfortable lead currently. He's at 7-under. The next closest to him, Xander Schauffele, at 3-under. Xander, though, 4-under on the day. Colin Morikawa, 5-under on the day. Wyndham Clark, 1-under on the day. Some other guys. Rory McIlroy doesn't go off until 2. Ludvig Åberg, 2 as well. Looking for some other guys here as well. Dustin Johnson was up there for a little while, plus 4. For his second round so far. Not great for him. I'm telling you, Wyndham Clark is doing one of the two things I asked for in the U.S. Open. He's already won one, so that's at least a named guy. He's a pain because all of his quotes suck. Just hates fun. Wears terrible shoes. But he's a known name. Second part, though. Dude, I want you to struggle out here. I want it to hurt. You win the U.S. Open by like one under, and it was a great time. Not seven under on Shinnecock, where Brian's texting us yesterday going like, oh, yeah, four guys have been under par in like the almost 600 to 700 guys that have played there at five U.S. Opens.
Little obnoxious.
Held at this course. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then I'm watching Victor Hovland have the worst pants in the world. Some of these golf decisions, unbelievable. Brooks Koepka was the same thing. His shirt was terrible yesterday. You're not winning in this. Jason Day is the same thing. You're wearing baggy pants like it's the 80s. What are you doing?
It's like the Happy Gilmore quote. Thanks for dressing up. If I looked like that, I'd have to kick my own.
It's just terrible.
Thanks for dressing up.
I'm not even the biggest fashion guy when it comes to – I mean, don't get me wrong. I like golf clothes, but I'm not the biggest fashion guy in the world for that. But some of this, I'm like, you walked out wearing that? Your friends allowed you to do that? You got to pick new friends and some friendships, man. I don't care if it's 20-plus years. They let you walk out wearing that. And some of these – and very clearly, they're also bets gone wrong. Very clearly.
I might be like starting to get the giggles from being tired, but like the last 5 minutes turning into the Zach Jones rant hour is very entertaining to sit here and enjoy.
That's Friday. I'm going to the weekend.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm having a lot of fun hearing you complain about things connected relatively to sports.
It's all nonsense, too. It's all first world problems. I feel like a bad person complaining about most of it. It is what it is.
I'm having fun. So... Keep going.
Real quick.
What else has got you?
I do want to bring this up here before we have to take our next time out. Chaddy Dominicis, he wrote up a piece over at Expected Buffalo, and he mentions Columbus as a potential destination for Bo Byram. No, he would not be the number one right away, right? Zach Rowinski, the Norris Trophy winner this year, he is there. But there is some uncertainty around if Rowinski is going to – water's wet. Columbus may not be able to keep one of their stars, right? Like this is sort of the ever – present problem for the Blue Jackets is guys don't stay there. And that may be the case here again with Rowinski. And he brings up the idea that some of these forwards Yarmo has connection to. One of them is Kirill Marchenko, the 25-year-old right winger, 27 goals last year, 67 points. He's their second leading scorer only behind Rowinski. For me, it's not even necessarily just Columbus here is the idea. It is more, we talked with callers in the last hour of, you know, what could the package be? Is it even going to be enough? Just kind of ride it out, or it's got to be. I more fall into the camp of there's enough options out there. If you got to trade Bo, you can probably get something for him. And something that, while it will be painful because you're losing a player like Byram, you can still look at the shiny new toy and go, that'll be good. I can make that work. This is just fine.
So Columbus... I think all I needed to do was expand my mind a little bit.
Open your third eye. That's good.
Open my mind's eye. There is a player that I would be interested in. He did not have himself a good year this past year with Columbus, but I do wonder about him. If he's paired with, say, a Marchenko, like, can you ask back for a player like maybe a Dante Fabreau? So that you come back
you've
with
wanted
a defenseman.
Him for a little bit.
I've wanted him for a little bit. He had a not good year this past season, but maybe all of a sudden that's an add-in. And then he plays next to Owen Power and, you know, life is cool again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Perhaps. There's ways where and no Jarmo Kekalainen didn't hand out many full NTCs or even a lot of like limited ones. He's not one of those GMs in Columbus. They're not racked and rifled with no-move clauses. They're signed by his successor for a couple of guys, but Yarmo didn't really hand them out in Columbus like candy. I'm pretty sure, I think we did the math on this. Like, we looked at the history. I'm pretty sure it was like 14 all-time.
Yeah, he was – well, I don't want to say he's one of the few, but like he's definitely not a GM that looks at that and goes, I have to put it in every contract, which is, I think, a real positive going forward.
Right. So there might be something there where you could talk me into this sort of thing. Columbus, though, does not have the most attractive pieces to come back.
No, I mean, I bring up Marchenko there because I saw other people were bringing him up as well. But it gets into guys like Adam Fantilli, a 22-year-old center. 59 points last year, he would definitely be attractive. But why would Columbus give up
a 22-year-old center? 22-year-old center that is
– they drafted in the top 10. You know, Cole Sillinger, 22-year-old center, 33 points. Not very good
there. Sillinger and Johnson fell off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sillinger kind of has just become a 30-point producer.
Mm-hmm.
Kent Johnson's the one that, like, he loses 4 minutes on average of ice time per game last year. Point production drops off, and Kent Johnson was looking like one of the players that, like, him, Fantilli, Marchenko are going to be the future of this team at the forward core.
His average time on ice last year, just over 13 minutes.
He was 17 the year prior.
Yeah.
Oof. So it was a sharp drop off for him last year, too. Like, Columbus had a couple of guys really fall off here. Fabro on the back end, Johnson. I mean, it makes sense why they have to fire a coach, bring in Rick Bonus, and he almost gets them back over.
Yeah, and then lights a fire around them, and then gets the job. Should be mentioned, he keeps the job.
Yes.
I think most of us thought, ooh, either they're going to fire him or they love him for this. And I mean management. And they loved him for it. They
turns
brought
out
him right back.
The ladder.
803-0550, the number to call. We'll be right back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.